welcome everyone to another episode of Classroom to Staffroom, where we talk all things teaching. I'm joined by my co-host Jodie Epier.
How are we all?
I'm Miles O'Kane, and we look forward to taking you all along for the ride. My man, week five, term two. Yes. Marks are halfway through, halfway week of term two. How are we feeling?
Oh, look, seeing all the establishment of everything you do in term one, rolling over into week one of this term, week two, week three, the structures, how all the kids come in, it's all set. Kids know, it's actually really nice. Kids even check themselves. I had one kid say to another kid, hey, go back out. And the kid goes, oh yeah, I forgot to knock and say sorry for being late. So just looking at those sorts of things, bro, it's nice that they're checking themselves on it. So part of it is good. Like, it's nice to see all the structures you put in place come to fruition.
Yep.
Now it's just more about the teaching side of things, just trying to hammer down the work ethic side of things, trying to make sure that they stay focused and not get distracted by any other distractions that's around the room.
Yeah, it's I can't believe how fast the term has gone as my dogs lose their mind in the background. I can't believe how fast the term gone in the year gone, man. Like, it just seems that these days just roll into one after the other. So getting closer to winter officially beginning, the cold, man, the cold breaks my heart. Anything below 18 degrees and it's game over for me. I think especially in the morning, like, you walk from the car park and it's just still dark and cold and walking through most public schools, the concrete jungles, it's put you in the mind frame to start the day. All right, so I'm thinking today's episode, we go back sort of a behaviour management approach, continue on from there, and specifically look at those real difficult classes we've had in the past. I think sort of what to sort of have an idea of what they look like as a class, strategies that we have used that may or may not have worked, and then maybe some success measures, how you know you're starting to make a difference with those classes.
I think this topic is a nice topic to come across, because I think it's something that all teachers need to understand, that you're going to come across a class that's got kids that are quite hairy in the sense of the way that they act with others inside the room and so forth. This topic is one of the areas where I think as teachers, if you become more experienced with having to deal with this stuff, it becomes a lot easier, but it can be quite confronting if you're not prepared to put in what you have, like the hard yards that you have to do to try and establish that relationship with all the kids in the room.
I've done you dirty, man. I apologise. I messed up. I need to start with the left field question. I need to start doing this better. Was watching Walking Dead. You seen it the other day?
Not all of it, but yeah.
It's like zombie apocalypse. Just goes pear-shaped real quick. Watched season 1 year ago. I thought it was all right. Missed three episodes. Thought I'll just jump back into season 6. So lost. How do you reckon you'd go on a zombie apocalypse?
Bro, that's way out of left field, bro.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
I was just going to say, like...
You were thinking a teaching question, weren't you?
No, I'm going to go with this. As long as I protect my family, bro, anyone that comes near me, bro, I'll sacrifice myself.
I know,
man.
You would, because you're a true leader like that. What do you reckon the goal is? Is the goal to just bail up somewhere and get all the resources and just hunker down, or just to stay on the move and just collect stuff as you go and keep moving towards... You know, some hope, like, to say it all happens and then all communication, like, devices get cut off. Like, what's the go there? Just like hunker down, try build a fort, try cruise together and go from there, or do you just keep moving around and just like always on the move so people can't pin you down?
Yeah,
or the zombies.
I look at that, bro, and as I was hearing you saying that, games are coming to my mind that I've seen that actually happen. You can either build yourself a fort or dig underground. All these sorts of things.
Did you ever play Age of Empires?
Yes.
You heard of that?
Yes.
Yeah, so my whole strategy was that. Only way I ever win is if we played like the map of the small islands.
Uh-huh.
And then I started building like a massive wall around the city to start with. And that's the only way I ever survived. If I didn't do that, I was like invaded within like 15 minutes.
Yeah,
I'm like, how's your civilization advanced so quickly? I'm like still mining gold somewhere out the outback.
Bro, some of them are doing the cheat.
And old mate's running in with like full like cavalry. I'm like, righto.
Yeah.
So be the wall, yeah. So you reckon just
hunker down,
get the walls up, and then work on resources.
That's it. And just even if you could have to grow your own resources and do whatever you have to do. But then on the other flip side of that, the moving around may present more opportunities or more resources that you can sort of find. So it's a
always pros and cons, isn't there?
And that's one of the hard things. But I think to keep my family safe, if it means that I can make myself a bunker or something like that, and I can protect them within the walls that I create, then let's do that. But then if that's penetrated, bro, and then breaks down that thing, we got to move. So just adapt.
Just
adapt,
go Rambo.
Adapt to either, adapt to either one, bro. You
have to. It's a tough one, though, isn't it? Initially, I'm just going to bunker down and just like lock myself in the corner with the family. And I'm like, but wait, then they know where I am. They pick my location. Yeah. I'm on the move still. You're never comfortable, but you're more chance of getting locked down.
Yeah.
Always a trade-off to every situation.
Oh, yeah, man.
Anyway, we've gone from choice and whiteboard markers two episodes ago to zombie apocalypse. We're covering every topic. Okay, so I think we start with, in terms of what are the pointy end classes look like? I think you're, before we go there, I think you're right. I think teaching those super tough classes, usually a lower school class, year 8, 9, 10 class. For me, it's usually year 9 class. I think with those real tough classes have different teaching strategies that I even know between teaching a real tough year 9 class to a better year 9 class. Even within those two classes, I'm changing teaching strategies. So I think before we go into pushing down this path, we define what the characteristics of those tough classes are. So for me, I look at the sum. So say usually those tough classes, seems for a reason, sort of lower numbers, but you're still around 20, 25 students, so instead of the 30, 32. Most of the students, there's probably a handful of pretty pointy end students that can escalate pretty quickly and want to take the teacher to power struggle pretty quickly. I think students like to, most students like to push the boundaries in the class. Most students, the avoidance behavior, it's not so much the apathy of not doing the work. It's more the calling out and trying to, the reputation of yourself in those classes as a student. What do you think? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, the characteristics for me are the kids that try to get attention, be it negative.
Yes. Yeah. So you're more calling out, your name calling of each other.
Yeah.
Seems like it's more slightly aggressive than just avoiding, not doing work.
The other ones that I've noticed over the years is also things like putting others down, you know, identifying weaknesses that someone may have done and those kids exploiting those things, making other kids feel less.
Yes.
So that's another a tactic that I've noticed with some of the pointy end kids. Some of it, as you say, avoidance. You know, they do everything they can to not work. Some of the other ones that you can also see in some of the kids is some of them actually try deliberately to get kicked out of class.
Yes.
As a tactic to show, look at me, I'm the cool kid sort of thing. I'm out of class now, so forth. So, yeah, there's so many different characteristics that sort of stand out as to what makes pointy end or what makes a class quite difficult. But what it also does is that sometimes some of those kids try to find allies inside the classroom.
It's a big one. It becomes them versus the teacher, doesn't it? Or them versus us.
Yeah.
And I find that. And then it's almost, it is. And then it's, you're not trying to befriend them. You're trying to be firm still. But you're not just working with one or two students. So you're taking on the whole class, which can be pretty daunting. You know, especially for newer teachers, you know, you're locked, not locked in, but you're in a classroom with these students for an hour or so between that, just under that, just over. It can be pretty full on.
And if you've got kids like that are usually in trouble, they don't mind pushing those boundaries. They'll actually deliberately push that boundaries to see what the teacher's going to react.
Yeah. So I think in terms of strategies for dealing with these, I've got a few points. I'll go through them, then you talk on that. I'll go from that. So I think curriculums, a big one to start with. I think, I mean, they have the national curriculum there. They have the standard, the grade load standards. I know it seems like there is a trend with students who can't engage with the work or can't start the work, can't attempt the work. Generally, that seems to fuel avoidance behaviors because they can't access it. And then all the fears of what does this mean if they can't do it, that starts to come to light.
Yep.
I think in those situations, those students start to escalate more quickly. I think, those students, get those students off whatever the content's looking at, Australian curriculum, put them onto something they can handle to start with. Now, whatever your diagnostic testing, whatever testing you got available, if there's nothing in your fingertips, don't go crazy and stress about it, but just have something to start with as a foundation and then get them started on the work. So at least that way you can start to whittle down and break down the class and go, okay, at least these students can start attempting the work. And when those other tricky end students start to rear their head, then you can start dealing with them. So instead of dealing with one versus 30, your teacher versus students, now it's one versus 10 or then one versus 5 and work away from there. What's your thoughts on that with curriculum?
See, I think you're correct. We've got to make sure that the curriculum, even though the curriculum states that students should be doing this, we differentiate purely for the sake that you don't want to set the kid up to fail.
Yep.
You know, some of those kids who are already pointy-ended, they already know what that feels like. So what they will try and do is they'll try and escalate to the point where, well, I'm going to fail, so I might as well do it. So if we can remove that entirely in the sense of the curriculum. Give them work that they feel comfortable enough to, still challenging enough, but give them work that's set at their level to give them that sense of, well, I can do this. Establish that curriculum where they go, well, this is not too bad, sir. This is actually, I had one kid today simply say, sir, this is really easy, finding the rule of simultaneous equations. And before it was like, they found it hard, but once you break it down, so bring it in at a level that they can understand. Once they have success, success breeds more success, then you can sort of push them and go, well, add this on to you.
Yeah.
See what we can do with this.
Yeah.
And actually say to them, this is going to be a little bit harder, but if you stick to the processes that you learned for this one, do the same stuff. You'll find, oh, in time, it will get easier. A lot of kids give up so quickly.
I think so. Scaffolding. Scaffolding's a big one. I think so as well, because the scaffolding is the actual support system, isn't it, as well? Math might be lend itself better to this because there is that direction or process to follow. Mm. Well, the steps are probably more clear than other subjects, I'd imagine. And I think once you do build the steps in on the whiteboard or however you're demonstrating it, the students don't feel like it's just going from here to point 10 and they can't see the points in between. I think structure to your lesson, structure to a lesson with these students is big as well. I mean, I think attention spans these days are getting, and I know my personal attention span is getting shorter and shorter. And the kids, students we're dealing with, they're born into the system with mobile phones and technology and constant stimulation all around them. If you say you work off 60 minutes, you've got a chuff class, how many transitions would you do in a class, and then how would you structure that class? Either way, you want to answer it?
Yeah, good question. So over a 60 minute period, I actually have time fragments. If you can give clarity to a group of kids, if they can see we're doing this, then this is for X amount of minutes, automatically that anxiety drops, that fear drops, because they know this is what we're concentrating on. The other parts that they also put on the board next to those time increments is expectations of maybe one goal that we want to achieve in this 20 minute section.
Yes.
That way the kids can go, all right, sir just wants us to understand how to get this concept. And it could be one. So like today I had two to the group today, and I said, I want two concepts done today. And I said, the first one you've practically already got. So we're going to now introduce a new concept, see if you can get it. So I break it up. I do roughly five for the intro.
Yep.
For the kids, talk to them about expectations and so forth. Do about 10 to 15 of just going over some of the stuff that they already know, going over stuff. Sometimes you might introduce a game just to break the ice, just to get everybody like, oh, this is cool, you know.
Yep.
So I'm playing a lot of, I call it ride the bus. Simple, black, red with a card.
Oh, yep.
Higher or lower, in or out.
Black just
or
red. Just to engage the kids to start with.
Just to get them all. And then sort of have them playing against each other.
Yep.
Half of the class versus this half, whatever.
Yep.
So everybody's in there. Once they've finished that one, then you can see the excitement. It's like, oh, can we have one more? Okay, you versus you. Go.
Yep.
Send them back out to their things and get them into structured work. But I always lead that first part.
Yep.
And I always ask them, if I've already taught the concept, I simply say, tell me what's the first step, what's the second step, so forth.
Yeah.
And if they can echo it back to me, or if one kid, there's usually one kid that echoes back, I try and say, nah, the whole class echoed back, say it back, the whole class.
Oh, yeah.
What that does is that the whole kid just says, if you're saying it, it's going to get stuck in your head. If you hear other people saying it at the same time, it's going to get stuck in your head. You're going to hear this over and over and over. It's going to get to the point where you're going to go, sir, it's this. Good. When it gets to that point, great. Even the pointy end kids, because everyone else is doing it, they'll jump in. And then if you notice that they're not, I simply say things like, oh, I noticed someone, I may not say a name, I noticed a group of people didn't say it, let's go again, what's the first step?
Accountability.
And they jump on board. So a lot of it is just training, retraining, training, retraining. You repeat, I repeat, so forth, and it's just constant. You sort of allow them time to breathe, but then you allow them, you don't, so you keep them thinking and going.
Yep.
When it's time for them to go back after that 15-minute, maybe 20-minute session of me explaining what we need to do, that's where they get to try and test out whether the stuff they've just gone through allows them to be structured enough to do the rest of the work.
Yeah.
Pointy end kids, though, I separate them.
Yep.
I separate them, don't want them working next to each other. That helps them. I say, look, sit next to people, and I even say it simply like this, sit next to someone that's going to lift you up. Sit next to someone that's going to pour courage into you. Someone who's going to show you if you don't understand. That's a big, powerful thing, because some of those kids won't. And then sometimes you have to actually go, you
can sit next over there, yeah. Get on with it. Yeah. Oh, apologies to the listeners out here. Dogs are currently in the middle of a turf warfare with the new neighbours that have moved in, so they're trying to establish dominance.
Yeah.
So we'll deal with it better next time. It's so 2-3 transitions in a lesson.
Between 2 and 3.
Yep.
It depends whether the flow is going well, then I'll keep it going.
Yep.
But if the flow needs to be changed up or level up, whatever, then we'll go 3.
Yep.
And just read the room.
Yeah.
But you give the kids expectations. I even sometimes ask the kid to be my timer.
Oh, yeah.
And simply say, right, I allocate you to be the timer.
Yeah.
Keep me on track. If you notice I've gone over, say, sir, it's time to do the next one. Awesome.
So I'd work with that. So I work an hour lesson. I do three transitions.
Mm.
My first 15 minutes, probably 20 is too long, 15 minutes for this bunch, I work with just packages, almost for the term now, and those are just numeracy packages, puzzles, Sudokus, whatever, just get the students in, and it kind of, and this might be reflective of my personality, it brings the noise down, and it kind of just gets, okay, it's not a big drama to get into class. Most of the students know what they're doing, or can at least, and they can start to see progress as well, that they're working through, they can get some possible enjoyment out of it. Those students who are starting, those tricky end students in that tricky class, it gives me a chance then to deal with them. So I'm not, again, it's not just everyone waiting for them to start or everyone against you. At least they can do something and then I can work from there. It then gives me a chance to set up for the second part of the lesson. And again, that's not straight away. Like, I've got to train those students. So the time it gets to term two, they know what to expect. They know the consistency. It takes that cognitive load off them as well. They don't have to freak out about, you know, what's going to happen, what if, which again comes back into the avoidance and the fear of the unknown. But then the next transition after that, the second part of the lesson is my direct instruction. Usually you have something they can get up and collect a textbook to get some blood going back.
Yeah.
I'll then direct for 5-10 minutes. Then it's independent study where all the pair work, the group work, whatever it is. And the last 15 minutes is trying to do the more reward time. And again, that's earned, whatever that happens to be, and we build on there. And that seems to work okay most of the time with those students. I think I've tried to, in the past, do more transitions, and it just gets too crazy with those kids. And I think anything less than that, it's just too much time to work with. So curriculum covered. My next 2 points are the strategies for dealing with these classes. There's behavior management and there's building rapport. I separated the two of them because I think behavior management, we'll look at the rules, expectations, strategies behind that. And I think we'll look at rapport after that. So I think within behavior management, with these harder classes, setting the expectations of the classroom and making sure the consistency to follow through.
Mm.
It can be painfully slow at first and you're going to fight those battles, but you've got to go in and fight that battle, you know, and have the guts to do it. And you, if you need support, of course, get support, but make sure you've got the process in your mind. And that might take a bit to tweak, and you might have to go back. I've plenty of times had to go back to the drawing board and start at square one again. But as a consistency to win that battle, win those battles, that's where the breakthrough is.
Yeah, I'm gonna come in on that. That's absolutely one of the biggest things, consistency. And you'll hear it in even just life skills. Consistency is the key. If you're constant with the way that you treat students, irrespective of if they're students that are really kind or students that aren't, as long as you're consistent. And kids pick up on that.
Yep.
Kids pick up on whether you're consistent on whatever things that, and they'll say, oh, so you didn't do this or you didn't do that or so and so. So consistency is one of the key things that I picked up of what you're saying. The other part of looking at that is your behavior management is, as you said, friction. Friction occurs, and when friction occurs, something's going to happen.
Yes.
So you've got to actually be prepared to actually, if you're going to go all in, because what it is that the kid will then either be one of two things. They'll understand that you're not there just to, you know, push them into a corner. You're actually explaining to them, you know, have that tough conversation. Sometimes it's good to have a whole class conversation. Sometimes it's good to have an individual conversation. It depends. If it's a life learning thing where I'll stop a whole class and say, right, we're looking at this particular behavior. We don't accept this behavior in our class. We will never accept it. And I say to all of my students that sometimes I say, right, if you see it or if you hear it, don't accept it. And just simply say to each other, we don't talk like that in here.
Yep.
Or we don't accept that sort of type of behavior.
Yep.
What that does is puts pressure onto the whole class to be accountable to each other. So part of the behavior is they're actually regulating themselves.
Yes.
But as you say,
you're empowering them, aren't you?
It takes time to establish that sort of thing. Like, you can't just click your fingers and hopefully that's going to happen. You've got to teach them how it works.
I think basic things as well, like just seating plans. But then like realizing that just because you say sit here, it doesn't mean they're going to do it at first. Like, it's just beyond them. And I know even it can be the subtle movements as well. Instead of getting a whole class up and going, everyone gets the back wall, you sit here and you sit here. Just kind of see for the first few lessons who's sitting with who's working.
Mm.
Keep those students together doing the right thing necessarily. The ones that aren't, you can kind of start to move slowly. You know, and they may go and try buck it, but there's got to be a follow through there. Yep. No, I'm not going to sit here. That's fine. This is going to happen, you know, or whatever. There's going to be follow through here.
Yes.
If you can't do it with the teacher, you get your holler or whoever it is around to support you. So you and the student sees the follow through there as well. I think choices as well. And yep. I've definitely noticed this more, the more experience I get with teaching. Giving a student a choice, going, cool, you don't sit here or you don't do the work, this is going to happen.
Mm.
This is your choice.
Yes.
You don't come here now. As long as you stay like you're reasonable about it,
yes.
You're not going, this is going to go on some outlandish expectation. Most students come to the party because
yeah.
It puts them back on them. They're like, well, it's not, there's nothing to fight here. Like he or she, whoever the teacher is, being reasonable.
Yeah.
So I'm just, you know, like it's, I might as well get, come on board and do it now.
Yeah.
But I think where it gets broken down with some teachers is they just demand stuff.
Yes.
And not saying that the student has not done the right thing. You know, the student's added to their bit as well. But I think when the teachers start demanding stuff and going, well, you got to do this, and the student just falls back on that, then they dig in.
Yes.
And that's where all that friction is, like you were saying. So I think, the seating plan and having the choices, that's a big one as well.
That choices thing that you're talking about, one of the things that I also pick up is I always give them the choice. If there's a group of kids that have been disruptive or whatever,
yep.
I say, all right, if you can prove to me that you can work together, not a problem.
Yep.
But as soon as something or one thing occurs, then you are going to be removed. That's your choice now.
That builds in the trust as well, and they appreciate that because it's not. And that's and probably most of it, a lot of these classes, the students have been told previously that they're no good or whatever and have carried that with them. So the fact that suddenly a teacher suddenly trusts them and it's on them, they're like, oh, I can rise to this situation. And sometimes they don't, but it's not then going, it's all over. It's, okay, this happened, and then down the path you get another shot at it.
Yeah.
You know, and they can start to work with that. I, as probably stated 50,000 times on previous episodes, I'm big on organisation. And I think the more, like I have a year 9 class at the moment, have a little pigeonhole in one of the old bookcases there. I can't believe how much stuff's in there, like just between the packages and the exit, like everything, like it's just, but it helps me. So if stuff does happen in that class, I've got stuff to go to and you're not running out to photocopy or chase up this and chase up that. I think to the final point with these classes is the rapport. Yeah. And I've always been told since I started teaching, rapport is the biggest thing. It's definitely important. I think you still will be able to teach, specialising in curriculum stuff as well.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just become a glorified babysitter or a youth worker or whatever. So there's, but rapport is massive. What is in your mind?
Honesty. I think honesty is one of the big things. I'll call a spade a spade. I'll say it straight to their faces. What it is that they, what they see is what they get. You know, there's no fluffing around, you know, trying to zhuzh these kids up so that they feel good about themselves because of whatever.
Yep.
If you're straight with them, they understand where you're coming from, but then they will see that you are there for them based on how you're talking with them, with truth.
Yes.
The truth will allow them to go, oh, so straight up with us, you let us know this, isn't that, or whatever. Then once you've built that truth, that trust with the kids, and they've sort of trusting you and how they are with you in the room, the rapport starts to, you start to see little things where the kids, you can have a laugh, you can laugh with some kids, you can, you know, sort of smirk and ask a question and so forth, and the kids are like, oh, it's because it's this.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, it becomes like a natural thing. It's that whole, you don't even have to really push it because the rapport starts to naturally build itself because others see it, and then others in the car in the class go like, well, these guys are getting on well with sir, they're doing this, having a bit of fun. Then others start to jump in, and then this starts to jump in, and it creates that atmosphere in the room where you're just like, yeah, this is it. You can have a laugh. And then sometimes it's just a simple change of tone of your voice, then it sort of puts the kids back into, boom, you're back in check now. So now be mind your P's and your Q's sort of thing.
Yes.
But then that's something that they've also got to be trained, because you've got some kids who just use all these profanities and all these swear words all the time. It's like just a normal part. But when they come into the room, and then they'll automatically say, oh, sorry, sir. I said, hey, you're not a heathen. We've advanced from talking like that. If you have the ability to articulate your thoughts, you are very onto it. If you cannot and you revert back to words such as what you're using, it just shows you're taking us back in time.
Do better. Do better. My three with rapport, I think it's remaining calm, composed, and confident.
Yeah.
I think as a teacher, you got to demonstrate that you're not going to get rattled, and you're going to learn that, and that's going to be experience. The don't smile to Easter was always the old school teachers would tell, or the more experienced teachers, would tell me when I first came into the profession, as in just that first term, there's no, you're not trying to be their friend. Not that you are generally, but you're, just, you're being firm, these expectations, on the teacher, you're the students. Like, you're reasonable, but this is what I expect in my classroom. Positive reinforcement's a big one as well. And I think these students, let's not go on overboard with it, but just like being genuine when they catch them doing a good thing. It doesn't have to be in front of the class. That's incredible because they, you know, they will lose face with that a bit. But just walk past them, just mention to them quickly. That's well done. That's good.
Yeah.
Look at that. That's I'm impressed. Or whatever. And then they're not going to make a big song and dance of it, but they'll be, it will help them move forward.
Yeah.
So the last part was the success measures. How do we know? We've defined the class. We've implemented some strategies. How do you know as a teacher you're starting to make headway with this class? I think small wins, like obviously the frequency of behaviour outbursts in the class, they're starting to decrease.
Yes.
Students are listening for longer and at least attempting some of the work, listening to instructions. Big one for me is students start to fall into routines in the lesson and start to know what to expect.
Yes.
What about you for the small wins?
Oh, look, I think the small ones is they're minding their P's and their Q's. They're talking like humans and how we talk like now. So these kids who are coming and who are pointy ended start to act appropriately.
Yes.
In amongst. And even sometimes, you know, it's just a little, it might just be a swear word. And then even if they correct themselves and simply say, oh, sorry, sir. That there is a small win, which later on is going to come to a big win, because then they'll know that you don't swear around, sir, or you shouldn't swear anyway.
Yes.
And sometimes if you have to, you might have to say, whoa, do we speak like that in the class? And you'll hear all the kids go, no, sir. And it's like everyone's put on check. We don't talk like that. And what that small win does is just say, hey, you know, you're doing so well, but you don't have to swear or you don't have to do that negative behavior to get a response or to get something.
Just stay in check,
do the right thing.
I think you're right. That's the last one for me I'd finish on, was the students start to check their own behaviour and the feeling in the room is better as well. It's no longer us first, them, or teachers versus students. It's now you're starting to work together and the students actually, I mean, you can go to the further end with it and students want to be in class and start to see the importance of it, of education, sorry. But it's just that, yeah, students start to check their own behaviour and start to become more accountable with it. So, parting wisdoms.
For any of the young teachers that are coming out there, just be strong, be confident, as you were saying earlier. Be strong, be confident. And when you come up into a class where you've got those pointy end kids, don't try and push any kid into a corner, because they'll come out one of two ways. They'll either break down or they'll come out, not literally swinging, but they'll come out fighting, sort of thing. So try and always give them a way to save face. Try and always give them a way to know, to give them an option to try and choose the better option.
Yep.
Don't make the option too extreme where they're like, oh, cause I've seen some teachers go to that point of like point of no return. You've literally pushed them to this point here.
And it's hard to reel them back.
Yeah. So just for any aspiring teachers coming forward, just get out there, but be prepared to have those conversations, those tough conversations. That builds your character as a teacher, but it also establishes the expectations of what kids sees when they come into your room, that, oh, I can't act like this, or I can't be a Muppet in my class, or I can't be this, or whatever else.
Yep.
I've got to act a particular way. I've got one boy who likes to play games in my room, and every time he gets caught, he's just acting like he always gets caught. And I said, oh, I'll see you at recess, young man. You and I can have a game at recess. I'll see you then. And you see his head drop. And I said, well, you made me choose that decision. That was not my decision. It was from your actions. Oh, sorry, sir.
My one is getting away from behavior management. Just good on you teachers for doing your job. Adding to society. Hope you're all well. Look after yourselves.
Yes.
Like always, thank you for listening, and we look forward to the next episode.